not all the candles being lit. Because in many ways, these candles not being lit speak to me of the season that we're in right now, the season of waiting, of hoping, of expecting. This prayer, gracious God, startle us. Help us not to enter this season as business as usual, following the same script as always. Startle us with the expectation of something new. Amen. I have a confession to make. I'm actually, deep down, I'm really a Scrooge. Particularly when it comes to decorations, and particularly when it comes to Christmas lights. I call this my annual Christmas swearing time. You know, I'm just really, really, really a Scrooge when it comes to all of these decorations, much to my wonderful wife Lori's dismay, who really loves this time of year. So I try to keep my Scroogeness intact, but when it comes to hanging lights, when it comes to hanging Christmas lights, I absolutely thank God for my 6'3" son, who now can actually stand on the rails of our porch and literally reach up to our gutters and put them without a ladder. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. We had a three-story house in Chicago. Three-story house, these long ladders, Chicago. It was always bitterly cold because, of course, I hate it. So I waited till it was bitterly cold. And then you put the lights up and you have to climb down and move the ladder 2 feet and do it again. So a couple years ago, before my sons were 6'3" and could reach up and reach the gutters, which again is a beautiful thing. It's a great thing for my job is to give them the untangled lights. You know, just hand them, which is for me hard enough as it is. They're patiently waiting for me to untangle all of these lights, to hand them up. So there we were a couple years ago. Of course we checked all the lights before we put them up, because I would do that. So we got them all stretched out and plugged together and plugged it in a socket. And they all worked, got the ladder out, put the lights up. Always one section didn't work. And wouldn't you know it, it's the one section in the middle that everybody kind of walks up and sees. Now, if it was on the side, I would just say, well, you know, somehow it kind of meant to be that way. It's an unlit candle and it speaks of promise and expectation. And so I was, as I said, I call this time my annual Christmas swearing. So I was muttering under my breath and doing a fair bit of grumbling and complaining and all. Because, of course, you got to find that one bulb as to why all of those are not working. And to which my son says, Dad, lighten up. Lighten up. Ever had those moments? It was just, you know, just the smile on his face and that phrase kind of startled me awake. Lighten up. What a great Advent phrase. In that moment, I realized, you know, what I should have realized before, but I realized how fortunate I was to be able to share this time with my sons. How lucky I was. Lighten up. It took my son to remind the pastor why we put lights up in the first place. The actual ancient ritual of Christmas lights are a ritual to acknowledge the light of the world that has entered the darkness. I remember that's why we do this. What if the chore of putting Christmas lights became a spiritual practice for you? Rather than something you have to do because you always do it, it's your practice each and every year. What if it became a spiritual practice? that as you're placing the lights on the tree, as you're placing the lights on your house, you began to think about how dark the world is. You began to think about the trust that there is a light. God, I hope there is a light that no amount of darkness can extinguish. What if Christmas lights for you became a trigger? You know, there are many religious practices that they ring a bell. They're called mindfulness bells. That whenever you hear the bell, you stop. All of a sudden you get out of your routine and you're mindful of where you are and what's around you. What if Christmas lights became your mindful reminder? Maybe you're downtown. Maybe you're in your neighborhood. Maybe you're in your living room. What if wherever you saw Christmas lights, you stopped? You took a breath. You looked for the light. You tried to see light in your neighbors. What if whenever you saw Christmas lights, maybe in your own living room, your first thought became, how can I bring light to this moment, right now? I'm going to carry my son's words with me. Lighten up. What will the spiritual practices be for you this Advent season? What will the spiritual practices be for you that will help you to move from the periphery, from the edges, to the heart? Will Christmas for you be like every other year? Will you follow the same script? Try to organize just the right amount of Christmas cheer? Or are you open to something different this year? Something new. I love the imagery in today's Bible reading that Greg shared. I love the imagery from Isaiah where it says, prepare for God's arrival. Prepare for God's arrival. Get ready for God's arrival. Do something. Prepare for it. How many of you received gifts over the Thanksgiving time and that you prepared for their arrival? There are things you did. There are things you did in your room and things you put away, things you put out. You prepared. Then Isaiah said, you know, lift up the valleys. Level all of those rocky hills. Smooth out the ruts. Remove the stones that get in the way. Then, it says, God's bright light will shine and everyone will see it. Then, after you prepare, how might we enter the story of Christ's birth with the innocence of a child whose heart is wide open? Let's take a look at this video. $450 billion is spent every year just in the United States alone on Christmas gifts. It takes $20 billion to solve the world's water crisis. Mind boggles. Today we're going to embark on a four-week journey, a journey towards the celebration of the birth of Jesus. You know, since the 4th century, since the 300s, Advent has been a time of preparation, preparing to celebrate the birth of Christ, to ready ourselves for the coming of God's reign. I always wait for the question, wait a minute, wasn't he born already? Yeah, I know. Prepare for God's arrival. Not in a manger this time, but in our lives, in your heart. Advent is a time of expectation. Do you really expect anything different this year? Do you expect transformation? What are the stones that need to be removed so that we might see the light that has broken into the darkness? We're going to invite you to be part of a conspiracy. The Advent conspiracy. The word conspiracy typically is a plot to overturn the existing social order. We're inviting you this Advent to join us in a plot. Just to think a little differently about Christmas. Four simple yet profound ways. Worship fully. Spend less. But give more. And love all. You know, it was Thanksgiving morning and I got up really early to go for a walk. I wanted to walk and I wanted to pray and I wanted to be grateful. And I came back and I realized that I have time to read the newspaper. I never have time to read the newspaper. I always have time. I never give myself time to read the newspaper. And this is what I found on my deck, on my step. You know, I searched for actual newspaper articles, but they were hard to find amidst the pages and pages and pages and pages of advertisements. And the message is abundantly clear that Christmas is stuff. It cried out to me that in order to really celebrate Christmas, you know, I needed to buy more stuff. Of course, I need to buy more stuff. I need to buy bigger stuff, cooler stuff, newer stuff, better stuff. And the message of this huge stack of advertisements, on Thanksgiving, is that everything we were to be grateful for on that particular day isn't enough. I mean, how sad the stack of advertisements actually came on the very day we're invited to be grateful for what we have. The very day we're invited to resist our consumeristic society's temptation to tell us you need more stuff. How easy it is to get lured into the trap of going from shop to shop to shop, trying to figure out if we got enough for our kids. Do we have enough for our spouse? Do we have enough for our parents? Do we have enough for our siblings? Do we have enough for our relatives? Did we get enough? It occurred to me, enough for what? What are we trying to prove by buying enough? And then, I don't know about you, I've always then compared each of the kids. Did this one get enough? Did this one get more than this one? In order to what? Say that I love them? Is that how I say that I love them? In order to make them happy? Does happiness lie in stuff? I mean, we live in a culture where people are renting storage units to place their stuff, and we think we need to get them more stuff. Now, I'm not trying to be the Grinch who stole Christmas, although I'm really good at that. But Michael Slaughter reminds us in the title of his new book, it's not your birthday. It's not your birthday. I was hoping that would sink in. The question I'm asking, and we're asking in this Advent conspiracy, how did a story of promise and hope and revolutionary love become hijacked by consumerism and frenzied activity and stress? And how might we move from the periphery, from all those distractions, from all of that stuff, and not miss the heart of what it's all about? You know, I love the innkeeper in Luke's story. You know, I think the innkeeper gets a kind of a bad press. In pageants, he's always portrayed as gruff and mean. There's no room in the inn! And I've always wanted to be an innkeeper. My grinchiness would come out really good in that. You know, but it occurred to me that maybe the innkeeper wasn't that way at all. You know, maybe he was just a compassionate guy. The census, there really was no room. And he was super, super busy. Maybe he felt bad. There's no room. Got the stable out the back you can have. I'll try to keep you warm. We don't know anything about the innkeeper. The story's short. But the one thing we do know is that, like everybody else in town, he missed it. God entered the world. The angels announced it. The shepherds celebrated it. The wise men came seeking after it. The promise throughout all of the ages, it was now happening. And everyone in Nazareth missed it. They were busy doing something else. Their hearts were full of other things. So when it comes to preparing for Christmas, we often do just what we've always done year after year after year. We follow the same formula designed to yield us the appropriate level of Christmas cheer. My fear is that we might find ourselves fully prepared for Christmas and not at all prepared for Christ. Someone wise said, you know, if Christmas is not found in some way in your heart, you'll never find it under the tree. Story I love to always share, sort of like Christmas Eve just isn't Christmas Eve for me without Silent Night. The beginning of Advent isn't the beginning of Advent for me without the story of a young boy who didn't miss it. A young boy whose heart was wide open. Wide open. Wallace Perling. When people talk about Christmas pageants in Midwestern towns, Wallace Perling's name is always, always, always mentioned. From this one role that he played in the annual nativity production. I mean, old timers still talk about it to this day. You know, recalling exactly what had happened. Wally was 9 years old in second grade, although he should have been in fourth grade. He was big, big guy, slow of mind and movement, kind of clumsy. He was a lot bigger than all of the other kids in his class, but all of the kids loved him. The older boys tended to get kind of irritated and impatient with him because he was really uncoordinated and he always wanted to play the games and they didn't want him. They wanted to keep him off the field. But Wally always stayed, not sulking, just hoping. Always had this big smile. He was always helpful. And paradoxically, Wally was a protector of the underdog. You know, when the older boys would try to chase the younger boys away, it was Wally who would say, "Now let them stay. They're not bothering anyone." Well, one year, Wally desperately wanted to be in the Christmas pageant. And he wanted not to just be in the Christmas pageant. He wanted to be the shepherd with the flute. But Miss Lombard, the director, gave him another role. The innkeeper. Very few lines. And his size would make that "no room in the inn" much more forceful to Joseph. Well, the night of the pageant came, and it was, you know, the annual pageant, and all of the town arrived, and there were sheep costumes and halos and fake beards and the whole lot. No one, off stage or on stage, was more caught up in the magic, the sheer magic of it all, than Wally. In fact, they said later that Wally would stand off to the side, entranced. Miss Lombard, the director, just feared that he would just stumble out onto the stage at any time and not wait for his cue. But it came time. Joseph arrived with Mary. Knocked on the door that was painted door that was in the frame. Knocked hard. Wally was ready. Opened the door brusquely with a gesture. What do you want? He had been practicing. And Joseph said, We seek lodging. And Wally, kind of looking off in a distance, not looking at Joseph or Mary, said, well, seek it elsewhere. And Joseph said, well, we've been traveling for days, and we've stopped and we've asked. There's no room. Well, there's no room here either. And Wally sternly continued to look into the distance. Well, Joseph said, but sir, my wife, Mary, she's pregnant. She's so tired. Surely you must have a corner. Just a corner. And this is the first time that Wally didn't look off in the distance. He looked down. And there was silence. Kind of that embarrassed silence. The whole gathering started to kind of fidge and get tense. Finally, off stage, you could hear Miss Lombard, Wally, your line. No, be gone. So Wally was, no, be gone. So Joseph put his arm around Mary. Mary put her head in Joseph's shoulder, and they started to walk off. But Wally didn't go back in the inn. He stood there, his mouth open, his brow crossed, and noticeable tears welling up in his eyes. Wait! Joseph! Mary, come back! And then Wally had this big smile on his face as he said, you can have my room. Now, there are many people thought the Christmas pageant was ruined. And there are many, many others who thought it was the most Christmas of all Christmases. That somehow in those words, you can have my room. Christ was born in Wally's heart. And in response to those words, Christ was born in more than a few hearts that night. So let me ask you, will you follow the same old script? Or will you join the conspiracy? Enter into the story with the innocence of a child whose heart is wide open. May it be so.